everyone, and thank you for joining me. Now, previously on the channel, I've recorded a podcast all about the gut microbiome and how we keep it healthy. And I speak about probiotics in that particular podcast and the benefit that they can potentially bring to us. In this one, I'm going to go a little bit more detailed and talk about the gut microbiome in relation to certain conditions, so things like cancer and COVID-19. Ultimately, I want to answer the question as to whether we would be wise to pay more attention to the role of our gut microbiome with regards to our own health. So then it might touch on a few very similar areas to the previous podcast, but I'd like to introduce some new ideas, some new thoughts, and it might contain a little bit more detail than the previous one. At this point, I'd like to thank my Upper Six student, Chloe, who actually conducted the research and provided the content for me to use for this particular podcast. So let's start with a definition. So the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences define the microbiome, just so we kind of set the scene, as the collection of all microbes, such as bacteria, fungi, viruses, and their genes that naturally live on our bodies and inside of us. Now, in the past, we have assumed that the gut bacteria have the sole useful function just in digestion. However, we are now beginning to uncover our remarkably complex relationship with our microbiome and how these interactions contribute to our well-being. Although there's only been kind of early research into the microbiome's effect on other bodily systems, strong links have been found between the microbiome and the immune system, as well as our own mental health. So what I'd like to do in this podcast is just cover the functions of the microbiome and its link to numerous diseases and conditions, including obesity, COVID-19, cancer, and even touch on anxiety and depression. And I want to discuss how and why this could be used to prevent diseases in the future. Our microbiome controls, it affects, and it helps so many processes in our body. In addition to playing a vital role in the digestive process and metabolism, it also stimulates the immune system and regulates the mood. Microbial genes that benefit us have been found to perform a variety of functions, including coding for enzymes to hydrolyze food that we can't digest alone, coding for proteins that form essential nutrients, making vitamins that we can't produce, such as vitamin B used for DNA synthesis, and even repair, and helping to release more energy from our diet. Now, molecules made by the gut microbes enter the bloodstream and also positively aid the body by stimulating cells to store energy as fat or glycogen, determining how we respond to insulin and can even regulate appetite and weight gain. Other microorganisms affect our immunity by releasing compounds that reduce inflammation and prevent the immune system from, I guess you could say, overreacting. Within the gut, commensal microbes inhibit pathogen growth and increase the host's barrier function by increasing the thickness of their mucus layer, including the antimicrobial molecules, and regulating antibody secretion. So one can easily see the essential role that our microbiome plays in just the day-to-day processes that go on inside our body. For every cell in our body, there are 10 bacterial cells, most of which reside in our gut. So it's unsurprising, therefore, that they have such a large impact on us. People are born with a microbiome already in place, which mostly develops by the age of 3, according to research. However, it is affected by a diverse range of inputs throughout their life, meaning it's incredibly variable, even between people of the same age. This starts at birth, as it's been found that babies delivered vaginally rather than via cesarean section actually have a much more diverse microbiome due to the wide variety of bacteria ingested by a baby when passing through the birth canal. It's thought that the microbiome formed via contact with the birth canal actually helps build the immune system. Breastfeeding and human contact during infancy also help to build up our microbiome. And then throughout life, it's impacted by our diet, and particularly any intake of antibiotics. Whilst dietary fibre helps to build up the microbiome's diversity, antibiotics decimate the populations of populations of benign and beneficial bacteria. Now, this has been blamed, in fact, for hospital infections such as Clostridium difficile, as these beneficial bacteria would normally outcompete the rarer pathological strains for space and resources in the gut. Now, these factors lead to the microbiome composition varying throughout the world in association often with social circumstances. So let's take, for example, a country like New Guinea. Gut microbes are strikingly diverse within that large continent. This could explain the contrasting diseases prevalent in different economic environments. The often poorly diverse microbiomes of people in developed westernised countries are now linked to many chronic diseases common in the affluent West, such as inflammatory bowel disease, including Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, type 2 diabetes and obesity. In fact, it's been found that obese individuals have different intestinal microorganism communities to lean individuals. They have a higher proportion of gram-negative to gram-positive microbes in their gut, increasing the concentration of lipopolysaccharides, which have been shown to generate chronic inflammation in mice and lead to insulin resistance. Research shows that if the intestinal microbe from an obese mouse donor colonized a germ-free mouse, the recipient mouse would gain weight. Now, this suggests that solving obesity is not simply correcting a poor diet or reducing the quantity a person eats, although this plays a large part, obviously, but by solving an imbalance in the microbiome. So how is the microbiome linked to COVID-19? Well, some researchers suggest that the effectiveness of vitamin D in our body could be dictated by the health of our gut, as a healthy gut is needed to activate the vitamin. Researchers have analysed stool and blood samples of over 500 different men who have been in good health, and they found a link between active vitamin D levels and microbiome diversity. Now, one of the researchers that I'm referring to here, Deborah Cado, reports that it didn't seem to matter how much vitamin D that these participants were getting through sunlight or supplementation, nor how much the body was able to store. It simply mattered how well the body was able to metabolise that into active vitamin D. That's a 2021 study, in fact. Now, the missing link in metabolising the vitamin could explain why so many other studies have delivered contradictory results of the vitamin's effect on other conditions such as heart disease, cancer, or even bone health. Vitamin D has been found to be key in protecting us against COVID-19 infection, suggesting that we should be looking into manipulation of our gut microbiome as a preventative measure for COVID-19. So Professor Mel Greaves suggests that we should take a look at the gut microbiome status of patients who reacted severely to COVID-19. He's reported as saying, "The striking ethnic bias in severity of outcome of the virus has been attributed to the prevalence of comorbidities, and especially obesity and diabetes, both of which are suspected as being linked to microbiome deficiencies." And it poses the question, might a poorly diverse gut microbiome explain both the comorbidities and the adverse or exaggerated lung inflammation that sufferers have with COVID-19? Another small study, which was published in the BMJ in January 2021, I believe, supports that idea. It found that one may be more likely to develop worse COVID-19 symptoms or longer-term coronavirus-related health issues if they have a condition known as dysbiosis, meaning an out-of-sync bacterial balance in their gut microbiome. Dysbiosis may also influence the blood concentrations of several inflammatory cytokines and blood markers of tissue damage, both of which can lead to complications associated with the coronavirus. It is unknown whether the imbalance of bacteria in the gut was pre-existing or just whether the virus caused a significant disruption to the microbiome itself. The study found that people who suffered worse or longer-term COVID-19 tended to have very low levels of three beneficial bacterial strains: Bifidobacteria, Faecalibacterium prausnitzii, and Eubacteria rectali, all known to be essential for the regulation of the gut response to infections and to keep chronic inflammation at bay. The sickest COVID-19 sufferers were also found to have an overgrowth of bacterial strains detrimental to human health, particularly Ruminococcus gnats and torquils, as well as the bacteroids Dorae and vulgatus. Now, researchers assume that it is these bacteria that are causing much of the systemic havoc experienced by some people with the virus, as they are closely linked with inflammatory bowel and irritable bowel syndrome, as well as affecting our upper respiratory tract and airways. However, this is an imbalance of well-known gut bugs, which can be assessed in stool tests, and we already know how to help rebalance these bacterial strains through diet and food supplements. Fueling the healthy bacterial strains generally helps to drive down the number of bad bacterium, and then herbal antimicrobial supplements can also be used, many of which can even be found in our own kitchen, so garlic, oregano, rosemary, thyme even. With coronavirus being a worldwide issue, and a virus which we may be living with for some years to come, this actually may be the key to keeping it at bay. The microbiome plays a role in the development of cancer, and that's what I'd like to talk about in this part of the podcast, especially gastrointestinal tumours associated with chronic inflammation or prior inflammatory bowel disease. It's been estimated that 1/3 of human cancers are associated with chronic inflammation, assumed to be caused by viruses or bacteria that are yet to be identified. However, a more generic problem with the microbiome diversity could easily be to blame. Cancer therapies also have a complex interplay with the gut microbiome, with implications for both therapeutic efficacy and associated morbidities. Researchers at the Institute of Cancer Research and Imperial College London report that cancer patients with lower gut bacterial diversity were more likely to suffer from radiotherapy induced gut damage or intestinal disease. Many cancer treatments, including drugs and radiotherapies, directly damage the immune system. However, along with the often co-administered antibiotics, they also erode the gut microbiome, therefore exacerbating the immune dysfunction. Patients given new regimes of immunotherapy might be expected to benefit from the incorporation of microbiome boosters. Patients with blood cancers who are given bone marrow transplants undergo tough preconditioning regimes coupled with antibiotics which leave them with damaged microbiomes. This is now recognised in some clinics in the US as they have their patient stool samples collected and stored to later be reinfused as an enema, therefore rebuilding their microbiome and solving the problem. Now we are beginning to understand the negative effects that cancer therapies have on our gut microbiome. I think it's fair to say that the microbiome should be more widely considered when administering these treatments, and it could be used, in fact, to reduce their side effects. Now, at the start of this podcast, I said I would link this to mental health. It's an area I didn't really touch on in the last podcast and definitely want to address now. The microbiome not only influences our immune system, but it can have a proven effect on mental health. The gut and the brain are connected by the vagus nerve, enabling bi-directional communication abilities as such. Now, the gut produces about 90% of the body's serotonin, one of the, I guess you could call it, the happy hormones, and a host of other neurochemicals. A lack of serotonin is often associated with depression. Now, that could explain links between microbiome-related intestinal disorders and mental illnesses such as anxiety and depression. Our understanding is still in its infancy, but future treatments for these disorders could stem from manipulating gut microbes. When the beneficial and harmful bacteria fall out of balance, this can cause changes in the brain that affect mood, anxiety, concentration, and so much more. However, just as an unbalanced microbiome can cause brain issues, psychological stress can hinder the growth of beneficial bacteria in the gut. Now, researcher Malan Mueller and team wrote in a Journal of Integrative Biology that this new frontier of biological psychiatry and post-genomic medicine should be embraced by the mental health community, as it plays an ever-increasing transformative role in integrative and holistic health research, certainly in the next decade. Treatments involving manipulating the microbiome are already being used in modern medicine. For example, fecal microbiota transplants, where stool bacteria can be transferred from a healthy donor into a diseased recipient to restore healthy colonic microbiota. Such transplants have been successful in patients suffering from Clostridium difficile infection, and further research is being done to determine whether this treatment can be used to help other non-gastroenterological conditions, such as Parkinson's disease and obesity. Now, whilst associations between human conditions and this particular microbiota characteristics are appearing, a greater understanding of which microorganisms are overrepresented or underrepresented in individuals suffering from such conditions will ultimately aid in the development of those treatments. With such a wide variety of microbes present, the vast majority of which to be harmless, it's difficult to identify the function of any specific one. However, next-generation sequencing has made the study of microbiomes possible, and we can now read directly from millions of bacteria without even culturing them first. The Human Microbiome Project started in 2008, and it aimed to map the human microbiome and analyse how it interacts with human health and disease. Huge progress has been made to date, but there's still much more to be researched. In the future, when we understand the microbiome better and have the ability to monitor it, these associations between human conditions and particular microbiota characteristics may be used in the diagnosis of diseases. For example, we already know that obese individuals have a reduced ratio of Bacteroidetes to Firmicutes. And people with inflammatory bowel disease have been found to have larger populations of Enterobacteriaceae. Apologies, a bit of a mouthful there. These capabilities could also be used to predict prognoses, create personalised dietary interventions, and lead to increased use of probiotics to regain a healthy microbiome. Enhanced understanding should also help determine how to manipulate the microbiome to reap health benefits and bring a new era of what we call personalised medicine. So really, I think to conclude this podcast, I'd just like to kind of end on this. We're only just beginning, really, to understand how our microbiome plays a role in so many aspects of health and so many conditions and diseases. But I think the evidence that I've tried to present today proves that it plays a bigger role than we perhaps thought. Now, maybe our gut microbiome is really the conductor to the orchestra of our body. As we learn more, the hope is that the microbiome and treatments which manipulate it are considered more, I guess you could say, mainstream. The possible areas for research and investigation into the microbiome seem limitless. But as Elle Lindsay said in her article in the Biological Sciences Review of 2020, in time, this frontier could revolutionise the way that we look at the human ecosystem. I'd just like to say at this point a big thank you to Chloe Igg once again for conducting the research for today's podcast. If you have any questions about anything that I've spoke about, get in touch at kytosbiology@gmail.com. And if you haven't listened to the previous podcast about the microbiome, that's definitely worth checking out, especially if you have an interest or background in probiotics. So all that remains for me to say is a final thank you to everybody for listening. Until next time.